You're listening to Irish Radio Canada's Home and Abroad, and we've been telling you that there was an event coming up, which was the dedication and unveiling of a pair of bronze shoes to commemorate the burial ground of Irish famine victims in Ottawa at the MacDonald Garden Parks. And Michael McBain was the historian who unveiled and discovered this particular piece of Irish history in the capital region. And yesterday the shoes were officially unveiled. This is part of the Global Irish Famine Way, and Michael is here with me. Michael, great to have you with you. Congratulations and thanks for coming along. Big day yesterday.
It was. Thank you for having me on, Austin. Yeah, it was a great crowd and a really important event in Ottawa's history.
Now, when you said that in Ottawa's history, you know, we are all very familiar with the famine, and the people in Ottawa are very familiar with the canal being built by the Irish, but the people in Ottawa were not familiar with that there were famine victims who were actually buried in Ottawa.
Absolutely. It was a total surprise to pretty well everyone. It's interesting that Canadians know about the famine, Irish Canadians especially, but they don't know much about it, its impact in Ottawa, locally. The Ottawa chapter of the famine was an unknown chapter, certainly unknown in Ireland, but even unknown locally. People know about Quebec, they know about Montreal, to some extent they know about Toronto, but didn't know about Ottawa.
And they would have. They would have known a little about the spaces in between, because the presumption was that the ships would have gone along the St. Lawrence, along the Lake Ontario, so potentially Kingston and along there. But we're a bit off the beaten track.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So the Ottawa story of the famine refugees, they came from two directions. They came up the Ottawa River, which is a natural link. And then they came down the St. Lawrence and then were sent up the Rideau Canal, which made no sense because it was a lot longer and there was more suffering involved. But that was basically just some people trying to make money off of transporting people and getting paid per head by the government. So they were coming into Bytown in two directions, thousands and thousands. Some were coming just in transit on their way to Western Ontario, but many other thousands were coming because they had family and friends in Ottawa and up the Ottawa Valley. And that was one of the very important links in the story, is that people didn't go places arbitrarily. They usually went looking for family and friends.
And do you have any sense of the number of people who would have come jointly between the two routes, between the up the river and up and to, along the canal?
Well, over 7,000 came here and stayed here in Ottawa and the valley, but many more thousands came through in transit on their way further west. So probably tens of thousands came through Bytown.
And then if that number came through, how many would you consider then, or do you have any clue how many actually stopped and stayed, what would be in this region? Let's not confine it to the city, but in the close proximity, are there any guesstimates?
Well, about 3,000 in close proximity and up over 7,000 if you include the valley further up.
And is there any record of where these people may have come from? Because the point you made was that people tend to go where people were from or where they already had people. And it was not unusual that was the standard form of migration also prior, so that people who would have come previously would have been either from, you know, they would have come in the 1820s, 1830s, but were there particular parts of the country? Because we know Culloden, there was a lot of people ended up the Ottawa Valley.
Yes. Yeah, what we don't have the port of origin for these folks here. But we know from the records, they were desperately poor and in desperate shape. So we know then that they're from the poorer areas of Ireland. And the assumption, at least my assumption, is a lot of them came from western parts of Ireland, which was basically part of the worst hit areas in the famine. But we don't have particular locations, although we do have quite a few names of people. We have all the names of refugees who were admitted to Sister Briere's hospital. So that's an important list of people, but it doesn't say exactly where they came from.
And when you say Sister Briere, that is a vital part of this link. That is a vital part of the story. The hospital and the nuns and the land that was given for the burials.
That's right. In the lead up to Black 47, the newspapers were reporting large gatherings of Irish emigrants congregating in Liverpool, hundreds of thousands. And the sisters in Montreal, Sisters of Charity in Montreal, sent a letter to Bytown saying, "You better get ready because they're coming. They're coming to Quebec and Montreal, and they're coming everywhere. They'll be coming right through all of every stop in Upper Canada, so you better get ready in Bytown to receive them." So that was in February when they were alerted. Now, what's interesting is here's the religious order in Montreal alerting their network of a major crisis coming as soon as navigation was open. However, the government took no action themselves. Only private sector charitable organizations were anticipating a disaster, but the people in charge of the quarantine station, etc., did not take precautionary measures in anticipation of an influx. And so, as soon as spring arrived, Elizabeth Briere worked with the parish priest, the oblate, and with the emigrant agent, George Burke, to have a temporary hospital built, separate from the regular hospital. Because of the infectious nature of typhus, they didn't want the two in proximity. So they got as ready as they could in anticipation. And the first ones arrived, the first refugees in Bytown, many of them sick with typhus, on the 5th of June, and were met by the emigrant doctor, Edward Cortland, Van Cortland, with some sisters, and any that were deemed needing immediate hospitalization were sent with the sisters. It's interesting, in the early days of this crisis, the only ones willing to transport the sick were the sisters themselves, that the cart drivers were afraid of getting sick and getting a deadly disease. So the sisters transported them to the temporary hospital. And the interesting thing was, when they got close to the hospital, they had a house set aside to decontaminate the patients. So they got rid of their dirty clothes, and they gave them a bath, and they deloused them. That's what saved their lives, because the means of infection was the lice. And if you delice somebody, you've broken the chain of transmission.
Michael, do you have any idea where the temporary hospital was sited?
Yes. There is an old print showing where the wooden structure was. It's present-day Briere Street, and it was since built over to become part of the old General Hospital. So it's about a quarter way down Briere Street from Sussex, but it's now been built over and is a major grey stone hospital building.
Right. So then the event that occurred yesterday with the unveiling of the shoes, and that is tying in with the Global Irish Famine Way, and a little about the shoes and the history thereof.
Right. So when we wrote about this, the famine burial ground, and the ambassador at the time of Ireland, Eamon McKee, got on his bike and started visiting some of the sites referred to in the book, Bytown 1847. And when he came to the park where they're buried, he contacted me and said, now he assumed that they'd been moved to a current graveyard. And I said, no, they're still buried there. And that was 3 years ago. And then he said, well, there needs to be a commemoration. So we set up a committee. And part of our job at the time was, we have to figure out, what are we going to put up? What kind of a monument? But in the meantime, Eamon McKee had been in discussion with Caroline Callery of the Famine Museum, who initiated the National Famine Way in Ireland, which had the Bronze Shoes Memorial along the trail from Strokestown, where 1,490 refugees left in 1847, all the way to Dublin. Their walk is memorialized by these famine shoes monuments. And the shoes are a replica of a pair of children's shoes that was found in an attic on the estate at Strokestown, and were in recent years, and were so evocative. They're children's shoes bound together and became the symbol of the famine journey, a symbol which also contains elements of hope, a symbol of journey and of hope. Eamon had set up a meeting, and we discussed with Caroline to extend the National Famine Way to Canada. And it was soon agreed, and then that was the birth of the global Irish Famine Way. And, of course, the plan is really to extend it to everywhere the famine refugees went, which should include quite a few countries, as far away as South Africa and several Latin American countries, etc. But after Canada, the major destination which the shoes will be extended to will be the United States. So Canada is the first extension of the National Famine Way.
My understanding also of the shoes was that some of the landlords gifted shoes to the departing destitute people, and that effectively, if you had spent your life barefoot and you were about to start walking on a major hike, you wouldn't put on shoes. And those of us who have ever walked a Camino or anything like that, you know you have to break the shoes in before you ever go on any kind of a long journey. And my understanding was that the potential is that these were shoes that may have been gifted to a child who never wore them because, again, it would have been impractical and didn't bring them with them.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah. Yeah, they're very evocative, and there's several layers of meaning to what the shoes mean, and that's a very practical observation.
So the park itself now has the plinth, has the shoes on it, and there is a plaque, and it is available. It's easily accessible to the public. Geographically, in Ottawa, it's on the north side of Rideau Street. It's west of the river, and the streets that are surrounding it. Do you have them off the top of your head? I'm sure you've been up there enough times.
Yeah. So when you drive down east on Rideau Street, you turn left on Coburg. So before you hit the Rideau River, and just go down a block, and you'll hit the park. So it's basically near the corner of Coburg and Tormley Street. But you'll see the monument from the street, from Coburg Street. It's close to the street.
And have you been able to determine anyway how many may have been buried at that spot?
Well, we have records of 340 buried there in the summer of 1847. Now, there would have been more in later years, but that one year, there's documented deaths of refugees, Irish refugees, in the summer of 1847, of 340.
And I know there was some kind of technology that scanned the land there, and that actually confirmed, as I understand it, that the bodies were still there.
Yes, we did ground-penetrating radar, but because the site had been so badly disturbed over the years, including bulldozing, etc., it's clear there's burials, but it's not really possible to identify which era and which people are in which grave.
Right.
So basically, the radar is good to tell you where you need to dig, but it won't tell you where the graves, much about the graves, other than there is evidence of graves there.
So while the unveiling happened and the shoes are now there, is there a plan that there will be an annual commemoration? When is the plan that it would be in June on an annual basis?
Well, that's to be determined, but there certainly is There's a number of members on the committee who think there should be an annual commemoration at the site. It remains to be seen what the timing will be, whether we tie into another Irish festival within already scheduled, or whether this will be a standalone is to be determined.
Michael McMahon, it's been great connecting back with you. Congratulations and fantastic work in unearthing literally this piece of Irish history in the National Capital Region and expanding the Irish story greatly. Thank you.
Thank you, Austin, for your interest.